In Psalm 127 and verse 3, the Bible speaks to us about children, and here's what it says. It says, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is His reward." Children come from God. They are a gift from God. And then Genesis 33 and verse 5, when Esau and Jacob met up again after having been separated for several years. In Genesis the 33rd chapter and verse 5, Esau runs to meet Jacob. And in verse 5 of Genesis 33, it says that he lifted his eyes and saw the women and the children. And he said, "Who are these with you?" And he said, "The children whom God has graciously given to your servant." When children are turned over to us by the Lord, they become our responsibility. And we're going to have to give an account unto the God of heaven one day for our rearing of them. And all of us should be eager and ready to give a faithful accounting unto God. You ever thought about the seriousness of what we are doing when we ask for children to come into the world? They go from being non-existent to now they're going to live forever somewhere for all eternity. And where that is has a whole lot to do with the job that we do as parents. So really what all of us should do as parents is we ought to ask God to help us in this thing as we seek to rear our children. In Judges, the 13th chapter and verse 8, you may remember when the angel of God came to Samson's parents. Manoah was not there when he first came, and he wanted the angel of God to return. And in Judges 13 and verse 8, it says, "Manoah prayed to the Lord, and he said," Judges 13 and verse 8, "Manoah prayed to the Lord and said, 'Oh, my Lord, please let the man of God whom you sent come to us again and teach us what we shall do for the child which will be born.'" That's our attitude. We need to say, "God, teach me what to do for the child that is to be born." I want to build my lesson tonight around Ephesians 6 verses 1 through 4 and also Colossians 3. But let's read these two passages. In Ephesians 6 beginning in verse 1. Ephesians 6 verse 1. It says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord." And so we have a responsibility to bring our children up in the admonition of the Lord. And then in Colossians chapter 3, just a few pages over in your Bible, Colossians chapter 3 and verse 21, it says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children. Do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged." There are two things that we have to avoid as we try to bring up our children. One of the things is we need to try to avoid wrath on their part. We do not want to provoke them to wrath. But another thing that we don't want to do is we don't want to deal with them in such a way that we cause them discouragement. And so we're trying to avoid wrath and we're trying to avoid discouragement. This verse said, "Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged." You know, when you think about it, each of those things can be seen in the animal world. You ever seen a dog that was not handled right? And a dog that had been mistreated, a dog that had been provoked, and the same thing happens with them. Some dogs that have been mistreated will become very shy, and they'll become very timid and very spiritless. There's been times when I've tried to get a dog to come to me, "Come on, come on, it's okay, it's okay." And they just won't come to you. They're scared to death, they're afraid you're going to hurt them in some way. And you just really have to work hard to get them to be comfortable with you because somebody has mistreated that dog. Other dogs, on the other hand, that have been mistreated will become very vicious and mean and angry. And they'll bite you. And so you get these responses even with dogs. And the thing is true also that our children can come forth with these same responses. And so God is saying to us as parents, provoke not your children. Now, what I want to do is I want to talk about some things tonight about what is being forbidden here. What is God forbidding when he says, don't provoke your children? Some folks would say, well, what God is forbidding here is he's forbidding the exercise of authority. And I want to tell you, we're living in a world now that where that has become a bad word. It's getting where more and more they're even teaching children that you do not have to listen to your parents. And this idea of authority is being more and more shut down. That's what some would say this is forbidding, is that we should not exercise authority. Others would say that this provoke not your children is forbidding rules and regulations. Then some might say, well, it's rebuke. I mean, what right do you really have to tell a child what it can and cannot do? And so don't provoke your children, don't rebuke them. That's what some think this is talking about. Some would say that it's punishment that is forbidden, because everybody knows, I mean, that teaches violence, doesn't it? So punishment is being forbidden, some might say here. And then some would say, well, it's denying wants, because if you deny them their wants, then you're going to provoke them to wrath. And so that's what God is trying to say here. Don't deny them their wants. Well, I hope you were able to see through every one of those. These are not the things that are being forbidden by God when God says, do not provoke your children. I want to talk about some false ideas along this line. First of all, it is not the exercise of parental authority that God is forbidding. God has told parents that they must exercise authority over their children. Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 5. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 5. In 1 Timothy 3 and verse 5, in the qualifications for an elder, in verse 4 it says that he is to be one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, then how will he take care of the church of God? That's a strange passage if we can't exercise authority. That verse is saying that a father or parent is to rule his children. He is to rule his house. He is to have his children in subjection. And then verse 12, it says the same thing for the deacon. It says, let deacons be the husbands of one wife, ruling their children and their own houses well. And I'll remind you, this is the same man who wrote Ephesians 6. This is the same man who wrote Colossians chapter 3 when he says, provoke not your children. Here he is telling parents that they are to exercise authority over their children. And so this is not what's being forbidden. Furthermore, I would tell you that rules and regulations are not being forbidden. Turn to Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 20. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 20. And very quickly you find out that parents have a responsibility to lay down some rules. Lay down some rules to the children. Proverbs 6 and verse 20. My son, keep your father's command and do not forsake the law of your mother. There's a father laying down a command. There's a mother laying down the law. Do not forsake the law of your mother. And then, Ephesians 6:1, you don't have to turn there, but again it said, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. So here is something that they are being told to do that they must obey. So it's clear that rules and regulations are not what's being forbidden when God says, provoke not your children. Let me tell you too, it's not rebuke either that's being forbidden. God tells us that we are to rebuke our children. Look at Proverbs 29 and verse 17. Proverbs 29 and verse 17. Proverbs 29, 17. God, correct your son, and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. So there's going to have to be times when you're going to have to turn to your child and say, don't do that again. Why did you do that? Rebuke your children while they can give you rest. And then in 1 Samuel, the third chapter, in verse 13, 1 Samuel, the third chapter, in verse 13, here's a really interesting passage to me. This is in the days of Eli. And you may remember that God was going to kill Eli's children. And he told Samuel the reason. In 1 Samuel 3 and verse 13, he says that I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his sons made themselves vile, and he did not restrain them. So here are Eli's children, Hophni and Phinehas, making themselves vile, and Eli never says, stop it, boys. You stop it now or you will pay a price for it. He never restrained his children. He never rebuked his children. And so we see then that God clearly expects us to rebuke our children. So it's not authority that's being forbidden. It's not rules and regulations. It's not rebuke. And I'll tell you too, it's not punishment either that's being forbidden when God says, provoke not your children. Turn to Proverbs 19 and verse 18. Proverbs 19 and verse 18. Proverbs 19 and verse 18 says, chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction. So God says, chasten him while you have hope. But make sure, though, that you do not set your heart on his destruction. And then Proverbs 23 and verse 13. Proverbs 23 and verse 13, which is probably a verse that doesn't get read a whole lot these days. It says, do not withhold correction from a child. For if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. I think one of the reasons people recoil sometimes at that verse is because they see some parent that's got just a big old metal rod, maybe like a policeman. What do they call those, them sticks you have? I'll ask after church and find out what that is. Is it called a billy stick or a bully stick or something like that? But anyway, we just see this big stick that someone's got, this rod. But yet, that's really not what the Bible has in mind. Do you remember Aaron's rod that budded? What that really was just a limb off a tree, a branch, a switch, we sometimes call it today. Corporal punishment is clearly taught in Scripture. And I want to really impress that upon all of us tonight. The Bible is clearly teaching that corporal punishment is not only endorsed by God, it is called for by God. There's nothing wrong with spanking your children. There's nothing wrong with taking a switch and switching your children. Yet, the society that we live in today is trying so hard to work against that. I really believe that too many Christians are drinking from the wells of psychologists rather than listening to the Word of God. He's the one who made us. He's the one who knows what our children need from time to time. And corporal punishment is clearly taught in the Scriptures. And yet we've got too many situations today where parents just seemingly can't pull themselves to do that. And I personally believe that there is going to be a great, great, great price to pay for refusing to administer, when it's needed, corporal punishment to our children. When it's administered in the proper way, you are not provoking your children to wrath. Children understand it. I remember years ago, we used a switch. It didn't seem that much of anything else got Bethany's attention as much as a switch. And I don't mean to embarrass her, but we were getting ready to go on a vacation. And she wasn't very old, but she was old enough that she was receiving some switchings from time to time. And we were packing the suitcase, and Bethany had gone into the kitchen, had gotten a little step stool, and climbed up to the freezer of the refrigerator, and she was pulling her switches out of the freezer. We always kept the switches in the freezer because it keeps them green and it keeps them limber, where they really have that little good action that you want. And she got those out of the freezer and brought it in there where I was, and she said, here, Daddy, she said, you'll need these to spank me with. And so she seemed to understand that, you know, that's just something you're probably going to need. And yet, parents seem today not to understand it as well as children do. Years ago, I heard of a man who told about a fellow who was in a restaurant, and his child was just misbehaving in a terrible way. He warned him once, he warned him twice. And he continued to carry on his nonsense. And finally, his daddy took him outside the restaurant. He went out behind their car, and he began to administer corrective discipline on his child. And this woman who had been witnessing the whole thing in the restaurant probably knew what was about to happen, so she followed him out there. And she goes out there just as he's beginning to spank his child, and she just gets irate, and she said, "You stop this right now. I'm going to call DHR on you." And she just went on and on and on. And the child had initially been crying because of the spanking that he was receiving, but when she started doing her thing, he turned and looked at his daddy, and he said, "Daddy, what's wrong with her?" He understood what he was getting. He knew why he was getting it. And what was not normal to him was her reacting the way that she was reacting. And so we need to learn, folks, this is time-tested and time-proven. It's given from the God of heaven. And I'm not saying that that means that every situation calls for a spanking or a switching or whatever you might want to call it. But there are places where you must keep this in the bag. I want to tell you something. Children need something to dread. They need something to dread. Somebody once said, I think it was John Wesley's mother, she said, "Pain is a great healer." And she really was right about that. And years ago, I remember when I was growing up, it was so common for people to get up during services, take their children out, and you knew by what had been going on what was going to happen when they took them out there, because they were expected to behave to the degree that they could behave, and when they were defiant and would not behave, they were taken out and they were dealt with. And that was very common. I don't know how much, I mean, I don't pay attention. You know, you could put a bomb in my pocket when I'm preaching and I wouldn't know it. And so I really don't know how many of you are getting up and doing that from time to time, but I'm telling you, there's a place for that. It reminds me of the boy who was being taken out during services. And his daddy grabbed him up, threw him over his shoulder, and was headed out the door, and the boy was crying. And as he went out the back door, he said, "Y'all pray for me." So, you know, he knew what was coming. But what I want you to understand is I want you to understand that this is not what God is forbidding when he says, "Provoke not your children." And then denying a child certain wants is not forbidden by God. It seems that King David ran into that problem because he had not denied his children anything at any time in their life. In 1 Kings chapter 1, beginning in verse 5, Adonijah tries to take his daddy's throne. It seems like it's the idea that this young man, whatever he's wanted, he's always gotten. And when he decides that he even wants to take his own daddy's rule and power, he goes after it. In verse 5, it says that Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, "I will be king." And he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. And his father had not rebuked him at any time, saying, "Why have you done so?" He was also a very good-looking man. His mother had borne him after Absalom. And may I say right here, I remember hearing a preacher say one time that any time you've got a good-looking child and an undisciplined child in the same package, you're headed for some trouble. Now, I'll tell you why that is. Because if they're undisciplined and they look good also, the kids at school will always be attracted to the good-looking young man. They'll always be attracted to the good-looking young girl. And if that good-looking young man or that good-looking young girl doesn't have discipline to go with it, whoo. And that's what David found in his case as well. So these are not the things that are forbidden. In the time that we have left tonight, I want to talk about how we can take these good things, though, and we can turn them into something bad. First of all, authority. When there is non-existent authority, it can provoke a child to wrath. If you want to know the truth about why some kids in this country are so angry, if you want to know why kids are in gangs and they are so hostile and violent and angry, it's because they're looking for family. And they are angry because they are suffering things that they never had anybody to warn them about. They wanted parents. Deep down, they wanted parents who would lay down guidelines and say, "You will not do this." But they never had anybody to do it. They had no authority in their life. And so as a result, they are angry. Who would have ever thought that children not having authority would be angry kids? They are. So God says, don't provoke your children to wrath. One of the things you're going to have to do is you're going to have to exercise authority over them. Give them the guidelines. We all must do that. The kids that are angry are kids that didn't have authority. It's because they had parents who did not exercise authority. In Proverbs 29 and verse 15. Proverbs 29 and verse 15. We see that there's just got to be authority in their lives. In Proverbs 29 and verse 15, it says, the rod and reproof give wisdom. Let me make a quick comment about that. Notice that God doesn't want just the rod. He wants some talking to go with the rod. You use the rod, but you also reprove. The rod and reproof give wisdom. But a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Have y'all seen any children in our society that look like they've just been left to themselves? A child left to himself brings shame to his mother. And we've got too many children in our society today who just don't have any authority figures. They don't have anybody to lay down the law. And so non-existent authority can provoke our children to wrath. Number two on this, on authority. Authority unexplained can provoke children to wrath. I really believe it's a mistake to only say to our children, because I said so. Now, I do believe that, I've done that, because I said so. But I do believe that there is a place for making sure that we understand that we've got to let them know more than that. I don't exercise authority just because I'm me. I exercise authority because God has told me to. God has told me, my son. God has told me, my daughter, to try to guide you in the ways of God. He's given me authority over you. And I'm trying to be pleasing to God. Now, I realize there's going to be times when our children may say, well, why? Or I just don't see why. And I think there's times we're just going to have to say to them, maybe you don't see why. But one day, you will understand why. And in the meantime, you're just going to have to obey me. And then also, selfish authority can provoke children to wrath. Sometimes parents can use their bigness to just kind of get their way. You know, just say no all the time to your kids because it's too much trouble for you, you know. So that parents can always have their way, they just sometimes exercise authority just because I'm the big guy here. And our children can sometimes read that and they can see that really we're exercising authority simply because we're selfish. And we've got the power to always make things go the way we want it to be. If we don't want to get up and do something, if we don't want to take them to do this or that, then we just say no. And exercise our authority because deep down we're just selfish and we don't want to sacrifice enough for the kids. Now let's move to rules and regulations and some things that can turn that into a bad thing. Arbitrary rules that don't have a reason. I don't believe we ought to have rules just for the sake of having rules. There needs to be reasons behind the rules. Furthermore, unclear rules and regulations can be very serious. Sometimes children don't really know what to do and what they can do and what they can't do because the rules just aren't clear. Kids need to know what the rules are. They need to be very clearly understood. Years ago, a preacher friend of mine, somebody asked him, when you were growing up, did you really hate the way your parents raised you, you know, all the things you couldn't do? He said, oh, no. He said, we had a great time. He said, the mom and dad, they'd lay down a line over here, and they'd lay down a line over here. He said, and we knew we couldn't do that, and we knew we couldn't do that. There were things over here that we could not do. But right there in the middle, he said, they gave us all kinds of room and freedom to do a whole lot of things, and we just had the best time. But he said, we were clear on what we could not do, and that also made it clear on what we could do. And that really helped us a lot growing up. Kids without guidelines, as I said earlier, are going to become angry. later in life when they face consequences that they were never warned about. And then let me say something about retroactive rules. And what I mean by that is every once in a while you'll have parents who will lay down a rule after the violation and then punish the child for a rule they were never given. And so here a child does something, you then put down the rule and then you punish them, and yet it's a retroactive rule. And sometimes that can just make them so angry because they were never told that that was something that I could not do. Now let's talk about rebuke. Let's talk about how we can turn that into a bad thing. Angry rebukes. Angry rebukes that are just there to relieve the frustration of the parents. And I really see that a lot. I see a lot of parents who are frustrated with their children. But I really believe the reason they're frustrated is not because of what the children have created. It's what they have created. It's what the parents have created. You've created your own frustration because of the lack of some of these things that we're talking about. But yet sometimes parents will rebuke a child and they'll do it in just such a strong, hard, harsh kind of way. And it's really just a way for the parent to just vent and just let all this out. I wouldn't be surprised if a child gets angry at that, because the parents are just flowing lava on the kids, when really what they ought to do is just calm down. If the child needs to be rebuked, calm down and rebuke your child. But there's no need to be a volcano on them. Angry rebukes. I want to qualify this one a little bit, because I don't believe that you can always avoid this, and I think there's times you have to be Johnny on the spot, and that is rebuking children before their peers. I believe there's times when you're going to have to get on to your children right in front of their peers. I realize that. But I also believe that if it needs to be something really strong, I do believe it's best to pull them aside from their peers, deal with them privately, and not embarrass them unnecessarily in front of their peers. You'll just have to use the wisdom to know what is best in regard to that. Another rebuke that I think can cause anger in children is when you rebuke them and you are comparing them as you do. It really bothers me when I have heard parents say, "Well, why can't you be like your sister? Why can't you be like your brother?" Well, I won't tell you why they can't be like their sister or their brother, because they're not their sister and they're not their brother. We don't need to be making comparisons among our children. We don't need to call them to stack up to what a sibling is. Because I tell you what that really does, it reflects pride more than anything else on the part of the parents. You know, I've got this child and I'm going to showcase this child, but this one right here, I mean, why can't you be like? When the whole thing is about pride. And I want to tell you, that's something we have to be careful about too, is showcasing our kids. You know, our kids are doing right well and we get so proud and we just want the whole world to see what a great job we're doing with our kids. And it's really parental pride is what it is. If you're doing a good job, good, but don't showcase it. Sometime back I was in a situation where there was an elder who was talking about his children and how proud he was of his children. And lo and behold, one of them in particular really did something terrible right after that. And I remember him saying to me, he said, "I was bragging the other day. I was bragging." And he was now wishing that he hadn't. Do your job, do it as good as you can, but just realize that along the way, most all of us are going to have moments when our children embarrass us. And we don't need to be making comparisons among them or trying to showcase them. And then last of all, or at least close to last on this, is the punishments again. Again on this, I believe there's some things that can make that turn into anger. When punishment is violent, when it's truly violent, and Tracy deals with that with DHR. He knows violent child abuse when he sees it, and he knows what is not. Anything that produces bruises, broken bones, lacerations is clearly in the category of child abuse. But to leave a little mark on a child, you know, where it's just a little red after they've had a switch or a spanking, or that's not child abuse. I remember hearing Sewell Hall preach one time, and I tried this. It never worked for me. But I remember hearing it, and I thought, boy, that really sounds good. But he said his mother one time heard him preach on child rearing, and after it was over, they were together, and she said, "I want to tell you something I never told you." She said, "When I was switching you when you were little, when you were growing up," she said, "I was hitting my hand at the same time." And she said she was doing that to try to make sure that she did not be excessive, that she wasn't going too hard. I tried that, and my hand just got in the way. So I finally just removed it. Now, I will admit to Bethany, what I did do a few times is I'd roll up my sleeve, and before I went in there, I'd hit my arm just to see about what intensity was needed, and then I'd go in and administer the discipline. But what I was trying to do is follow the principle of making sure that you're not excessive. And true parents that care about that are never excessive. Let me read this off to you right quick. Child abuse is unfair and unexpected. Godly discipline is fair and expected. Child abuse is degrading and demoralizing. Godly discipline upholds dignity. Child abuse is extremely harsh and brutal. Godly discipline is balanced and within limits. Child abuse is torturous and leaves scars. Godly discipline is painful, but it leaves no scars. Child abuse is promoted by hatred. Godly discipline is promoted by love. Child abuse causes emotional damage. Godly discipline strengthens self-esteem. There is a difference between those two things. Also, inconsistent punishment can cause wrath. Something that a parent laughs at one moment, he then turns around and punishes the next moment. I've seen that happen as a gospel preacher, where children were gotten onto because I was there. And it looked like the child was surprised at what happened. Well, I think I know what happened. They normally would laugh at that. They normally would let the child do that. But now that they're in the company of the preacher, now they're cracking down on it. And the child is like, "Well, what's up with that? I mean, you know, you've let this go and go and go and go, and now you're going to punish it?" Inconsistent punishment causes children to be angry. And then negative punishment that is designed to hurt the child rather than to discipline the child and show them what they can be. Turn to Hebrews 12. We must discipline in love. Turn to Hebrews 12 and verse 5. And you're going to have to give me just a grunt longer here tonight, okay? I'm almost done. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 11. In Hebrews 12 and verse 5, it says, "Have you forgotten the exhortation that speaks to you as to sons? My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and he scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons, for what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which we have all become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them, but he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness." I love verse 11. "Now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but grievous." In other words, it hurts. It's painful. You know, you don't say, "Thank you, sir, may I have another." You don't want any more of that. But he says, "But afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." I'm thankful for all the spankings I got. I'm frankly surprised I didn't get more. I'm not angry at my parents. I love my parents. I respect my parents. It didn't produce anger. It produced happiness and joy and righteousness. And a lot of times when you have punished a rebellious child, they'll later come on their own and they'll seek peace with you, because the one thing our children really want with us is peace with us. And that's what we're aiming for. And then the last one is denying a child their wants. Bottom line on this one is you can overdo the giving of things to your children. And if there's a big mistake that we are making as parents today, I really think we're giving our children too much in so many cases. They just get everything they want. They expect you to give them anything they asked for. They don't deal with it well when you say no. They'll throw their temper tantrums until they get what they want. And we cave in and we give it to them. And what does that teach them? What does that teach them? Many times the favorite things of children are things that they make themselves. I've been amazed how many times children were given something for Christmas, and rather than playing with the toy that was in the box, they played with the box. You know, they don't have to have a lot. Philippians 4 and verse 11, Paul said, I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I remember when Bethany was little, I don't know if she remembers this or not, but she had a horse that she used to ride when she was little. And all it was a stick that she had found out in the yard, and she had taped a can to the top of it. So here's a stick with a can on the top, and that was her horse. And she rode that horse, I wonder how many miles she rode it. But it was nothing more than a stick and a can. And children can learn to do that. My daddy talks about how they used to take a spool of thread, and you could put a rubber band in it some kind of way and make a car out of it. He talked about how they used to play sock ball. They'd take a sock and wrap it with string, and they'd hit that thing like a baseball. Kids years ago were happy kids, and they just didn't have all that kids have today. But kids nowadays get tired of this, and they want something else, and then they fuss at their parents when they don't get it. There's times when children just need to be denied some wants. Quickly, let me tell you that I once heard two children who had leukemia. Both of these kids had leukemia, and each parent was asking themselves the question, should we discipline this child who is going to die? Now you think about that. You've got a child that's got leukemia, he's going to die in just a few months, and he's just a little bitty kid. Do you punish that child when he's going to die? Or do you just shower him with everything he wants between now and the time he dies? What do you do? One family said, if God said that our child should be disciplined, then that's what we're going to do because it's bound to be right. And when that child died, the nurses and doctors cried because they had gotten to where they just loved being around that kid. The other child was given everything. He was never disciplined. And by the time he died, he had become a real monster. And the doctors and nurses, in a sense, were relieved because he just caused such a commotion when he was in the doctor's office. You don't give children everything. You give them what they really need. A child who learns to get used to throwing temper tantrums, what is that child going to be later in life? When he's always gotten everything he wants, if he'll just pitch a fit big enough, what will he do when he's a grown man, when he wants something and he can't have it? What will he do? That's important to remember. I want to wrap this up now. Wilson Adams wrote a piece recently called Is Corporal Punishment Child Abuse? And I want you to listen to just a few things he says. And I want to say a hearty amen to it. He says, look around. America's kids are a mess. They are overweight. Childhood diabetes is skyrocketing. They are over-medicated. They are overindulged. They are under-disciplined. And they live with a sense of entitlement. Okay, whose fault is that? Our kids can't read, they can't write, they can't speak respectfully to an adult, but they can text with their thumbs. Wonderful. So they grow up thinking their parents owe them a living, or the government does. Sure, there are exceptions. If your kids qualify as such, I will hug your neck. It's time that we place the blame exactly where it needs to be, the lack of parental love and discipline. Too many parents think it's their job to be their boy's buddy or their daughter's girlfriend. No. Your number one God-given duty is to parent. I know that some are thinking, well, what if they don't like me? He said, here it is in a nutshell. They won't like you, but they will grow up and they will respect you, and then they will like you. So don't get the cart before the horse, or in this case, respect before the discipline. I've met some new generation parents who have bought into the silly idea that if you reason with your two-year-old, you will never need to spank him. He said, have you ever tried to reason with a two-year-old? I'm assuming it takes one to know one. I've also noticed a pattern in those households. The general rule is this: the children rule the roost and the rooster. And when it comes to discipline, he says, even though it's initially unpleasant, love recognizes the long-term good. We understand this when we take our children to the doctor to get a shot. Even though it's painful, we realize that the benefit outweighs the immediate discomfort. And Scripture is blunt. If you fail to correct and discipline your child, you're withholding the very thing that he needs. And then he finishes saying, okay, no more excuses. It's time for Christians to step up to the plate and parent. And if you don't see the problem, I'm not sure what world you're living in. Our society is messed up. Our parenting is messed up. Do you think there is a connection between the two? As I finish tonight, I want to remind you of the words of John Wesley's mother, who said, the goal of training a child should be to shape the child's will without breaking the child's spirit. I leave this with you. Again, let me say it. You want to shape the child's will without breaking the child's spirit. He says there is a difference. The human spirit is exceedingly fragile at all ages and must be handled with care. It involves a person's view of himself, his personal worth. A parent can damage his child's spirit easily by ridicule, disrespect, threats to withdraw love, and by verbal rejection. Anything that depreciates his self-esteem is costly to his spirit. However, while the spirit is brittle and must be treated gently, the will is made of steel. It is full strength at the moment of birth, as any midnight bottle warmer knows. Even a child whose spirit has been crushed can present the most awesome display of willful power. We want to shape the will of the child, but leave his spirit intact. This is done by requiring reasonable obedience to predetermined commands that the child knows and knows clearly. If you permit your youngster's will to remain unbridled, the result is often extreme self-will, which makes him useless to himself, useless to others, and even to God. Thank you so much for the generous use of your time tonight. God bless you in that. These are things that I heard a long time ago. I don't know how well I have practiced them, but I know they are true. Somebody once said the problem about preaching on this is so many times you preach it and you don't have children yet, and so you don't really know what you're doing. And then later on, you've already had your children, and you see mistakes you make along the way, and so you think, well, there's just never a good time to preach on it. But if I preach this, I know it's right. If I preach this, I know it's right, and I can't go wrong with that. If you're here tonight and you need to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, we urge you to come tonight, repenting of your sins, confessing Jesus Christ as the Son of God, and being baptized to have all your sins washed away. Would you come while we stand and as we sing?